Technology exists to solve business problems. That's really what it is. It's there to solve business problems. I mean, it could solve personal, but in this case, it's solving business challenges. But we often get so caught up in the technology for technology's sake and the new, you know, okay, for a while it was Kubernetes and now we're talking about AI. And AI is a great example because there's this boil the ocean approach that a lot of businesses are sort of seeing. They're seeing so many possibilities, they don't know where to start. And that's where you get back into the Occam's razor, which is sometimes the simplest answer is the best answer. And so how do you break it down to simplify that?
Welcome to TBR Talks, decoding strategies and ecosystems of the globe's top tech firms, where we talk business model disruption in the broad technology ecosystem, from management consultancies to systems integrators, hyperscalers to independent software vendors, telecom operators to network and infrastructure vendors, and chip manufacturers to value-added resellers. We'll be answering some of the key intelligence questions we've heard from executives and business unit leaders among the leading professional IT services and telecom vendors. I'm Patrick Heffernan, Principal Analyst, and today we'll be talking about all things technology, including a look back and a look forward with Darlene Wilson, thought leader in the technology space with experience in cloud, IT, and digital transformation. Darlene, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thanks, Patrick. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. We've known each other for a few years now, and I would say we've had conversations that have stretched from life and how to live it to everything you can imagine in technology. And I think that's because we both bring very different experiences to the table. So I'm really curious, when you look at things right now, when you sort of step back and say, okay, over all the time that you've had your different careers and all your time in technology, what have been the biggest changes, not only from the technology perspective, but also the business of technology, how the business of technology has changed over the course of your careers?
It's a great question. And I'm thinking about this, and probably in answering this too, Patrick, I'm going to age both of us and both of us in an age perspective. But, you know, thinking back, looking, certainly, obviously, over probably the last 10 years of my career, if I go back, and we'll kind of go in reverse chronology here, but if I go back 10 years, it's really the advent of the cloud, and everything has been, you know, cloud-based. And what has changed for a lot of businesses, largely in their journey to move into the cloud, and what prompted that. And again, I'm going to give you a little extension of an appreciation here for, you know, hooking me up on the podcast Acquired, which is great, because I did listen to AWS. Even though I'd worked there, it was really interesting for me to rehear the story and really hear it from a different perspective in a lot of depth. And they did a great job talking about how really the cloud and AWS was born really and started in the realm of startups. And that was really their target market initially, was how do we get startups going really, really quickly? And then how they extended it into the enterprise space. And so for the last 10 years, I've been sort of living and breathing that with, you know, either through my own applications and working with, you know, what I've been doing with certain companies, or even in the consulting space and trying to support some of those enterprise customers, ISV customers, D&B customers, SMB, all the different segments. And to see how they've applied that has been really interesting. But then going back even further than that, you know, it's interesting to me because I started to think about what I was doing really early on in my career. And again, this is where I'm going to age myself back to the dinosaurs. But, you know, very early on when I had worked at Dow Jones years ago, and this is back in probably the late 90s, it was really the early stages of the internet. And so we were installing trading room systems. My job was as a product manager for our institutional and retail trading room systems. And we were installing these systems with on-site servers, point-to-point circuits, you know, everything was very, very bespoke for every single environment. And then what I could see, though, in this was there was now all of a sudden this, you know, new thing called the internet, but at the time still very static and mostly static HTML content. And people hadn't quite gotten into the idea and the understanding more broadly of how the internet was going to change from an application perspective. And so it was, you know, once we started seeing new applications, and you and I've talked before about Amazon being obviously one of the biggest earliest adopters in this space, really started to change things. So watching the evolution of, you know, these on-site servers, you know, very specific into the internet, and then how that grew into what has become cloud computing, and then watching companies and businesses go through their own transition in the cloud space has been really fascinating. And what's probably most interesting is you know, watching large-scale enterprises go through this, you know, adoption journey, but then some of the smaller businesses as well. And then watching the digitally native businesses grow out of, you know, straight up tech computing, the independent software vendors. Anyway, it's just, it's been a fascinating evolution. But to watch now where we're at in the cloud journey, I think is the most fascinating, and seeing what's happening with companies in that space.
So part of where we're at in the cloud journey, to look at it from the sort of the business side of the technology, is that cloud is now often, the cloud bill is often now the biggest piece of the budget for IT.
Yes.
And so yeah. I'm glad you brought up the acquired episode on AWS and the startup part of it, because that was not the case, nor was that really the promise of cloud.
Right.
And
right.
Yet that's where we've ended up. So when you look back, when you think back, in your mind, was there sort of a strategic imperative that it was going to get there no matter what, the cloud was going to kind of consume so much of the IT budget? Or is it just that's what happened organically, accidentally, not by any design?
It's a great question. It's a challenging question. I think it was probably going to get there, you know, in terms of what AWS had come up with was so revolutionary. And they were, you know, and they talk about that in the acquired episode of being so far ahead of the curve, you know, just, you know, so much so that it's still, you have Microsoft and Google still trying to catch up, even though they've closed the gap. But what's interesting about that, I think, has been, you know, was that early adopters, but they talked also too about largely it was public sector that actually adopted it second beyond, you know, anything like the startups before right. the enterprises. And I thought that was sort of interesting right. because that's a massive trust factor.
Right.
And, you know, but certainly I think, you know, certainly colleges, universities, the public sector who started to see the need for that elastic compute capability was and largely storage as well. So I think Amazon was really in the right place. I think it was inevitable more than anything. It was just a question of time. I mean, in you know, you could see it going, you could see what was happening. I think the flywheel effect of starting in that startup space for that rapid adoption and rapid new technology and the fail fast and everything that you were able to do on, you know, even in these early, just with the straight up, you know, compute, database and storage. And that's really right. what they started with. It was so basic. Right. You know, and then CloudFront from a distribution network perspective as well. So right. I think it was inevitable that we were going to go there because it was just a question of when everybody else was going to catch up.
Right, exactly. And you're right. I mean, they have caught up in a lot of different ways, but AWS still sort of sets a standard for how to, particularly how to run a cloud business. I'm curious. So you've had a few different spots in your journey, in your career.
Yep.
And what that gives you is a way to look at the changing nature of the ecosystem in terms of partners and alliances. So we talk about it a lot at TBR because we get a lot of questions about how do I partner better with this company? How do I create a three, you know, party alliance? So I'm curious what you've seen, especially in recent years, with the way that companies across the technology ecosystem, from the consultancies and the IT services companies and the hyperscalers and the software vendors and I guess even the OEM providers, how are they partnering differently than what you saw early on in your careers?
So, and you could do a multi-hour session just on talking about that for sure. But, you know, thinking about this, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot in terms of, you know, during my last role, you know, and even it started to sort of develop in my time at AWS too. And it's the whole philosophy of Occam's razor, which is this, you know, the simplest solution is often the best solution. Right. And one of the things that I think has, you know, when you think about, you know, certainly the different variations of partners that you have, you know, you've got the larger GSIs and consultancies who are focusing on the larger scale enterprise business. You know, you've got sort of the regional local players and here in the US, you know, Slalom, Presidio, some of those very targeted. And then you've got ones that are, you know, I've got a number of friends and former colleagues who have started up their own businesses, which are very small boutique firms, which is really interesting, and focusing on, you know, very specific areas of expertise, rather than trying to be broad and generalist and be all things to all people. What I've found particularly, you know, in a couple of areas is it depends on which market you're looking at, but, you know, because the enterprise space, when you're dealing with these large scale businesses, But even I think down into the SMB space, it's really coming at your clients and starting from a consultancy perspective of what's the value you're bringing to that customer and helping connect the dots for those customers and for those businesses between what they're trying to do in their business and how that meets their technology strategy. And I know there's a number of studies out there that talk about the fact that, you know, 2/3 of CIOs won't meet their goals in any given year because their technology strategy doesn't align with the business strategy. And what I found is the easiest way to connect the dots and the most impactful way to actually really have an influence on your clients and be, you know, become a trusted advisor is to be able to connect those dots between here's what your business is trying to do, here's how your technology strategy works for your business. And, you know, to me, and this is, I've said this over and I'm sure you've heard me say it in presentations before too, Patrick, is technology exists to solve business problems. That's really what it is. It's there to solve business problems. I mean, it can solve personal, but in this case, It's solving business challenges. But we often get so caught up in the technology for technology's sake and the new, you know, okay, for a while it was Kubernetes and now we're talking about AI. And AI is a great example because there's this boil the ocean approach that a lot of businesses are sort of seeing. They're seeing so many possibilities, they don't know where to start. And that's where you get back into the Occam's razor, which is Sometimes the simplest answer is the best answer. And so how do you break it down to simplify that? There is a lot of discussion around AI, and it's a challenging topic these days. And I just recently finished a fantastic book called The Coming Wave by Mustafa Suleiman, and I'm probably mispronouncing the name. But the book really talks about the transformational impact that AI is going to have on business, society, culture as a whole. And I would highly recommend that anybody who is interested in AI in general, but any business that's looking to determine how to bring it in from a business process perspective or a business product perspective, or is just even wanting to understand more, it's a great, great, great read. And I think it should be mandatory reading just because I think it's so informative and it's actually very well done. And it's a very interesting read, but certainly highly relevant for the AI topic and one that opened my eyes tremendously. So highly recommend it to any of your listeners as well.
I want to get back to AI in a minute, but there's one piece of what you said that we've consistently seen to be such a huge challenge. It's often more than just a company being fixated on technology for technology's sake. It's often the case that a company is really good at technology. And so They have their product, they have their solution. They're extraordinarily good at explaining how it works and what it does, but it's harder for them to do that. Okay, this is how it works and what it does for you in your business environment. Yep. So how do you, and I know you have experience on this, so how do you help companies that are technology minded and technology focused and maybe even, you know, to the nth degree, how do you get them to think that way? Because it's not just the buyer, it's not just the CIO that has to think about using technology to solve a business problem. It's also the technology provider that has to have that mindset going in. So how do you do that?
So what one of the ways, and it's one of the things actually, frankly, I had to learn myself as part of my own growth and my own career as I switched from, you know, leading a team of cloud platform engineers and being super hyper-focused on what we were doing to support. It was a shared services team. So how was I supporting my teams? How was I supporting, you know, what the entire organization was trying to do? And when I moved away from that and moved into a role at AWS in professional services and started basically, what I really started to do was to really understand my customer's industry and understand their business. And this is what I found so that a lot of, you know, a lot of organizations, a lot of individuals within organizations struggle with is they don't know their customer to understand. And we all assume, like to your point, we all assume that our customers that we walk into already have that idea of, well, this is my business, this is my technology strategy. And to your point, that they can explain how that technology really actually adds value for you. Right. So what I found is, and there's a great book out there that I recently finished called The Trusted Advisor, which is, you know, a phenomenal book, which talks about how to become or shift in mindset from a vendor to a partner. And how do you become a partner? And really that's shifting. And I'm sure in your business, you see this all the time too. How do you become a trusted advisor in terms of the knowledge you're sharing, that expertise? So what I've done is started by breaking it down again, back to the Occam's razor. It's all very simple, is we tend to overcomplicate it. But I think if you can come in and look at it and say, here's what's happening in your industry, at the highest level, here's what's happening in your industry. So how do you fit into your industry now? Now, here's what's happening in your business. And you can look at it both from a business perspective, a market perspective, technology perspective. But I've found that coming in with some ideas and presenting ideas back to those clients, rather than coming in and sort of with a blank sheet of paper and saying, tell me your five pain points, and then kind of trying to go back, go in and be a little bit creative about it, not overly arrogant to suggest that you know more about their business than, but really try and understand what they're doing before you walk in and spend that time with them, because they're looking at you for that expertise. And then largely in some of these, you know, the various partners and the partner organizations, you know, and again, if I go back to my, you can take the girl out of Amazon, but you can't take the Amazon out of the girl, right. Is Andy Jassy used to say famously, and it's something that's just burned into my psyche and being right now, is there's no compression algorithm for experience. And so any business that goes to a partner and is looking for information, even coming to TBR, is looking for, you know, looking for that expertise and that experience. And so while there's no compression algorithm for it, that's what we are able to provide. That's what you're able to provide. And so coming in is and starting with that level of, you know, credibility, and then being able to build on it, which is, here's what we're seeing with other customers in your space, what we've seen that's worked well, what's not worked well, shared that, but then gone out and really done your homework and understand what's happening within the industry as a whole. It makes a huge difference. And so for me, it was really looking at, and it was, I've never, when I was at AWS in the professional services, technically I was in the sales organization of professional services. I never felt like I was selling. I was solutioning for my customers. And then we'd have a commercial discussion about how much that was going to cost to solve that particular challenge. But we would come in and co-build a solution and co-define that solution. So it was.
That's fascinating. And I think what we're seeing now with, to get back to the alliances discussion, is a lot of companies shifting their mindset from I'm going to be a vendor to I'm going to be a partner, and making sure that they understand what it is that they're, whether it's the technology or the services or whatever, or the software partner, what they're actually going through as well. And so coming to the table, not just with, here's what I need to sell you, but coming to the table with, I understand from a consulting kind of mindset, what's going on in your industry, and being aligned at least around sales, around IP, around knowledge management, all that stuff. So I do want to challenge you on one thing, and it ties nicely to AI. I get it. There's no compression algorithm for experience, except maybe AI. It's possible that could be what it is, that algorithm. So I think of the two of us, we're not going to be doing this for forever. But in the near term, we are going to see AI change things. So do you think that there's, because I asked you at the beginning, you know, the biggest change, and you mentioned cloud.
Yeah.
If we had this conversation in 15 years, both of us will be long retired, thankfully. But if we had this conversation in 15
Let's hope
years,
so.
Yes, knock on wood. So would we be saying AI?
I think so, because I think AI right now is pervasive, it's transformative, it's impacting everything. And it doesn't, because it's not just impacting businesses and how they're operating, it's impacting individuals in such a profound way. And, you know, it's one of those things where the cloud largely kind of really focused more on the business aspect of it, you know, even though you could say you've got like sort of personal cloud computing, things like that. But I don't think the cloud has really become as pervasive and in the personal individual space, you know, as AI has. And I would agree with you. And I think the interesting thing, I think, for the AI is because the possibilities are endless. I mean, when you think about that, the challenge that most businesses have right now, and I'm sure you've seen this in your interactions with companies too, is where do you start? And what is going to bring the most value? And, you know, that's one of the challenges. The second challenge, of course, is data, you know, schema, disparate data sources, all of that, because AI is only as good as the data you have. And so many companies are running on legacy data systems, things like that. That's a big challenge. So certainly, yes, Patrick, totally agree that AI is going to have a massive impact and is going to provide that experience. I think, though, for the foreseeable future, the way I saw it from a services perspective and the services industry perspective is the consultants are that experience. And we're still going to need, for the time being, consultants to help bring that experience to help orchestrate the best path forward. Is it going to be that we can accelerate that work through the use of AI? Absolutely, no question about it. And will AI eventually be able to orchestrate and define that path and self-develop? I'm sure we're going to get to that place, but for the time being, it is the consultants that are able and the services companies that are hired to come in and help with these particular projects. They are that experience and they are how you achieve that compression algorithm rather than going and trying to find 20 people you hire on your own and hope that they have the right experience and bring them together and hope that it works. That's to me how I always positioned it with my customers was we are that experience and we are what brings and helps condense that compression algorithm for you. But yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that's going to be the AI is the game changer because it's in everything we're doing and it's phenomenal, you know, and even just listening to what's happening, you know, as I was sharing prior was in the digital media space and how it's changing just our experiences with media and all of that is, yeah, it's, but in the end, what's so interesting is it all comes down to how are we saving people time? Right. And that's the Occam's razor for me on that is anything you do with AI that saves somebody time is going to be a winning combination.
So, and I think the real next step, it's not just the saving time. It's the having something to do with that time that you saved, having that, because I've heard for years how automation and analytics and all is going to free people up to do higher value tasks. And my cynical response to that is always, you know, I don't always say it out loud, but my cynical response is, why aren't you doing those tasks now? Like, you know, if they're higher value, go do them and figure out another way to, you know, let the automation, let anything take care of the lesser value tasks. And I think we're at the same kind of position with AI where, like you said, anything that can free up time, and then you have to know what you're going to spend that time on.
And that's
right. That's what may be one of the bigger challenges to that return on investment
on AI is
understanding where not just you saved money and you saved time, but then you invested that saved money and time into something more valuable.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And that's where I think, to your point, AI is going to sort of, and there's been a lot of articles and a lot of pieces written about this and a lot of discussion about it is are people going to lose jobs over AI? And you say, it's going to shift. It's the economy is going to shift, much like if we go back and look at Amazon, you know, the discussion is like 60% of Amazon's business right now in marketplace is external third-party markets. So they've created a whole new marketplace, a whole new channel. And what it's done is people said, well, then people have lost jobs. And you say, well, but to some degree, you can look at it and say it's changed the small town, you know, Main Street. Main Street is now services. Mm-hmm. It's now restaurants. It's dry cleaners. It's nail salons. It's all of the service-based industry as opposed to a hardware store or, you know, things like that. So it's the product side of it. And that's where I think AI is sort of going to also shift things as well is it's going to be a skill set and it's going to be a lot around thought leadership in how you can actually now more effectively leverage AI across your business and coming up with new models and things like that. So it's a shift in the industry as a whole.
So the,
but it's going to be fascinating.
The English majors and the history majors are going to do well. You know, they're going to be in a good position to tell a good story and understand what it all means. So two last things I want to touch on. I know you've got a website you're about to launch, which will be probably by the time we air this. So just tell us about that. What is it going to be? What's it going to do? What's it for?
Oh, I appreciate you asking that, Patrick. I'm really excited about launching this website. And as you know, I'm on a bit of a sabbatical right now, but I do think that there's an opportunity. I've had some interest from a number of different individuals, companies, even analysts, about coming in and talking with them based on some of the experience that I've had, fractional type leadership roles, things like that. And so it seemed very helpful and beneficial for me to launch a website talking about my own capabilities and being able to promote a little bit of my own experience. And then also being able to communicate my thought process in that I really like to try and connect the business with the technology and look at technology and how it exists to drive those business outcomes, but then also how to help simplify this for a lot of companies without having to go to larger, you know, services companies and businesses to be able to do this, just to do it on an independent basis. And I'm really excited about it. So I'm also going to be blogging and writing about some ideas, all the books that I've been reading and listening to as I'm spending copious amounts of time while running and on my bike and doing other things. And so I'm really excited about being able to share this out and hopefully being able to work with different companies and different businesses in either a smaller or larger capacity to help them on their journeys as well.
That's fantastic. And that really gets at the whole trusted advisor, because the only reason why anyone listens to a simple or a boiled down simple answer to a complex problem is if they trust that you actually understand the complex problem underneath it. If you can take that complex problem, understand it, and then give them the essence, the simple answer,
then you're truly that trusted advisor. So
excellent. Well, now I have to ask, you've got to tell us about Portland to Portland. I'm telling you, we're sitting in the studio in Hampton, New Hampshire. There's no way you don't go somewhere through Massachusetts or New Hampshire to get to Maine. So we're going to be out there with signs on the side of the road, but tell us about it.
I'm so excited for that. And I do need to go and look at the detailed map so I can give you the exact days. And I'll be looking up for those signs too. So the very short version is about probably a little less than a year ago, I was looking for a very nice leisurely weekend bike road trip my husband and I could do, maybe through Napa, something kind of casual. I love to cycle. I've been a cyclist for a while and triathlete. I run and swim as well, but I thought it would be kind of fun to get away, do something different as a little vacation. Stumbled upon Trek Travels, Portland to Portland, cross country supported bike ride. And I found it in May of last year, and for 3 months, I kept it to myself, but every single day I thought about it, and almost every day I went back and looked at the website, and finally I said to my husband, because it's 3,800 miles from Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine, 3,800 miles, 48 days, so you're, riding on average 70 to 80 miles a day, and I thought, well, this is sort of an interesting idea, except, at the time I was working and I'm also have a husband and a dog. And I was like, how do you just pick up and leave for 48 days and go ride your bike across the country? And so I said to my husband, I said, I found this, I'm interested. And he said, sign up, we'll figure it out later. And
that's fantastic.
And I think Richard Branson is famous for saying, if somebody asks you if you could do something, just say yes, and then go figure it out later. And that's sort of what I've done. So anyway, my time has been largely in my sabbatical right now, has been my part-time job, has been basically training and readying myself for this massive undertaking. But I'm very excited about it. And I'll also be blogging about that too. So I'm very
fantastic.
It'll be interesting.
And when does it start?
It starts August 21st.
Wow.
And on August 21st, we will dip, there's 18, somewhere between 18 and 22 of us. We will dip our wheels into the Pacific Ocean, and then we will ride until October 6th, and we will dip our wheels into the Atlantic Ocean, and we will be done. And we will complete 3,800 miles across the U.S.
That's absolutely fantastic. Really looking forward to hearing that, seeing all the pictures and all that. It's going to be great. Excellent. I think it's just it's inspirational for me to hear you say something like, I'm just going to go do it and I'll figure it out later. That's just great. That it's not, you're not inspiring me to do another triathlon.
I've done those. Those are out of, I'm done with those for now, but who knows, maybe again.
Yeah.
Darling, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so much fun.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and book you for probably December. So you can, after you've recovered from your ride, and you can tell us how it was, and we could talk about everything we got right and wrong today in our whole chat about technology.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me, Patrick. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We'll be taking a break over the summer, and we'll be back with season 4 of TBR Talks in a few months. In the meantime, send us your key intelligence questions on business strategy, ecosystems, and management through the form in the show notes below. Visit tbri.com to learn how we help tech companies large and small answer these questions with the research, data, and analysis my guests bring to this conversation every week. Once again, I'm your host, Patrick Heffernan, Principal Analyst at TBR. Thanks for joining us, and see you next season.